Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 79 of the Uncovered podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter, and with me is Jared Kimber, who you can find absolutely everywhere. And just to let all of you guys know that all of our writing, our team's writing, videos and podcasts, they are available at goodareas.co, so go and bookmark that website. And now, as always, we're going to cover some off-the-field cricket news in this episode of Uncovered, as always. And the big one, I suppose, is that Ben Stokes, Jared, has opted out of the T20 World Cup. He says that he wants to regain his fitness, more importantly, in the bowling department, because, you know, his rehab isn't, you know, fully complete post-surgery. And, you know, he wants to be an all-rounder across all formats. Those are his words. So that's interesting, because clearly Stokes wants to play all major tournaments that he can after this T20 World Cup.
Yeah, I think there was a period of time when they thought, I remember that we were counting down the amount of balls that Ben Stokes could bowl. And we don't know, I think I'm right in saying this. We don't know exactly what his knee injury is. Mm. I think that's right. And so we were all assuming that he had no cartilage left in his knees, and that usually doesn't come back, right? Well, it never comes back, but usually you don't recover from that. You just get worse. It's a degenerative knee condition. It feels now like now that's maybe not the case. And whatever he had with his knees, he has actually been able to, you know, fix it. And, you know, the fact that he bowled in the Test series against India, we were expecting him to start bowling spin. And, you know, he completely changed out. So I think it's fascinating.
He took a wicket.
And also,
right,
to give up
with his first ball upon return, he took a wicket. Such a Ben Stokes thing to do.
obviously, yeah. But I do think there's an element of... I think it's interesting. He's going to give up a World Cup, which, to be fair, there's a part of me that's like, oh my God, he's going to give up a World Cup. And then I was like, well, actually, there's a World Cup every 5 minutes, so he can just wait and there'll be another one. But I do think that he now thinks he can get back to being Ben Stokes, the all-rounder again. And if that's the case, then he can, you know, then he goes back to being billion-dollar IPL prospect, and he can play for England for as many years as he wants. And, all, you know, it really does change his future, right? You know, as a batter, he's a very fine player of great innings, but he's not a great batter if that's his only skill. When he can bowl as well, really transforms what they have available to them. So he's, you know, that will change things for him a little bit. And also, my guess is he probably thinks of himself as an all-rounder. You know what I mean? I would assume he gets frustrated not being able to bowl.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was one of the best all-rounders in modern times, right, across formats. And, you know, he's not a great batter, but he's a clutch batter, right? He will give you those crucial knocks and win England tournaments, which is something that no one has done for them. Talk about the ODI World Cup final. Talk about the T20 World Cup final. Talk about those test matches, right? The Headingley one comes to mind first thing. So there are so many of those knocks that Ben Stokes has delivered that I do feel that even though England have enough resources to make up for Ben Stokes, the batter, and they'll have just as good a team at this T20 World Cup, the clutch factor is something they'll miss.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to find another player like him anyway, right? So you say to him, what do you need to get ready, and we'll support you as best we can. And, you know, to be fair to English cricket, they've been pretty good at that with quite a few players. You could argue the Stuart Broad one maybe a little bit more. There's, you know, maybe players like Matt Pryde didn't feel like they were treated very well at the end. But I think England's getting a lot better at just being like, we're not going to be able to find a replacement for you, so let's make you be good for as long as you can be good. And that's the right way of treating your talent. The wrong way is going, we'll find someone. Because, you know, it took them a long time to find a Ben Stokes.
Yeah, and I mean, they've done that with Ben consistently. They've given him that room to heal, whether it be physically or mentally. And I actually think this is great by the ECB, because they're setting great precedents over here. We saw that Virat Kohli's also taken time off. Currently, we're seeing this with Harry Brook. A lot of people are saying that, oh, you can play the county set championship, but not the IPL. Look, he's close to home. Okay, that makes a difference. Yeah. I mean, I do not understand how you guys don't get that, right? If I'm close to home, I'm in more of a comfort zone. And if I'm...
Well, I mean, he'll be staying at home for at least 50% of the time, probably 70% of the time, right? So there's a huge difference. And also, if he wants to pull out of a Yorkshire game, he will be allowed to, right? And go and do whatever he needs to do.
Absolutely. So yeah, easy on the hate, guys. You know, he's hurting. Just support him. Anyway, another big piece of news that came out, or well, it was just something that kind of tickled every cricket supporter's balls, if you will, is that the CLT20 discourse is back. The CEO of Cricket Victoria, Nick Cummins, he said that the BCCI, along with Cricket Australia and the ECB, were in active conversations to revive the CL T20. For those of you who don't know, this was a T20 Champions League competition back in the day in which, you know, the best four IPL teams would play other great T20 teams from across the globe. And Nick Cummins has stressed how the competition, or that one that was in the past, was ahead of its time. And it's just a matter of finding the right window. Now, I understand, Jared, that the window is a problem. Of course, the schedule is packed. Where are you going to find time for this competition? Perhaps that other IPL window could be a window. I don't know. But the other major caveat with respect to this conversation is that a lot of these players play for multiple teams. Like, imagine the Lahore Qalandars and Gujarat making it to the Champions League T20. Who does Rashid Khan play for? Gujarat. But then again, that would create an issue, right? So I don't know how this is feasible, because if you've got like 10 Mumbai teams at this point, right? What if it's just a Mumbai competition?
I saw Ben Jones suggest that the players should play for their home teams first, but it's like, there's no way the IPL is going to sign on to that, right? And so you're going to have the IPL teams should win it every time, and because they should have access to all their best overseas players, and they will, you know, I remember when Victoria qualified and I want to say Dirk Nannis, Cameron White, I'm not sure if there was one other, were already, it meant that Victoria had lost their star left arm bowler and their, you know, I assume Cameron was their captain at that time, and certainly their top order stalwart, right? And it's like, well, how do you replace those with your backup players, right? Like there isn't another Dirk Nannis. There's like one in the world at this stage. And so you look at that. The other issue was, I think Nick was right, that, you know, when they came up with it, I was massively excited. But very early on, it was quite clear that the Otago Volts were going to struggle in this kind of league.
And then also when Trinidad and Tobago made that run to the final, they lost Pollard next year to an IPL team, you know?
Yep. And you know, there was a period when TNT, New South Wales, Victoria, if they'd ever had a full-strength team, some of the South African teams were really, really strong. But it was before franchises kind of changed things. And so, you know, now the best Trinidad players don't all play for Trinidad, right? Like, you know, they don't all play for Trimbago. And so, again, you have this separation. And then you have, instead of getting New South Wales, it's split up a lot more. And Victoria split up a lot more. And all these sorts of things. The only one that's probably changed is the 100, which has actually gone the other way, right? So it's gone from having all the, like, some of the county teams that were sent over, is like, there are players there that should not be playing at this level of cricket. Whereas now, if you send a 100 team over, you'd be like, this is a very, very good player. Very, very good group of 12 players. But I think it's the fact that these players are all going to go probably to the highest paid teams. Then you've got the fact that you've also mentioned already, which is Mumbai has 73 teams and, you know, and some of these other franchises have 72 teams. And so how does, what happens when Barbados Royals go up against the Rajasthan Royals and the Pal Royals? Like how does that even work? Because so many people work for the same teams. They go, you know, coaches and assistants and analysts work for everyone. But the general concept, I was always really excited about. I always thought it could have been absolutely great if they'd gotten it right. But the reason it failed was because no one gave a crap when the IPL teams weren't playing.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? And that is, I don't really believe that's going to change now. But if you get the Major League Cricket winner, the Big Bash winner, the SA20 winner, you know, And you know, it would be great if the PSL teams are going to be there, but they probably won't.
He did mention, though, Nick Cummins, that they want Pakistan teams in this. I initially thought that, of course, they're going
to be. Nick Cummins would want Pakistan teams in it. Would the Ambani family want Pakistan teams in it? I'm going to assume Nick Cummins and Nita Ambani probably have slightly different views on PSL teams playing in the Champions League. My guess is they're not going to be in it. I mean, that would be a shame, and obviously it would be piss people off like you and me. But I don't think that actually ends the, you know, if you think about the Champions League in football, it's, you know, it's only European teams, isn't it? Like, you know, it's, there will be strong teams outside of Europe at times that aren't a factor in that as well. So There's no perfect way of doing anything like that. But it would be stupid if there wasn't PSL teams in, but there won't be PSL teams in it. I'd be very, very surprised.
Well, I mean, in the last
but Champions I don't see League, how they make the money off this.
In the last Champions League T20, you did have the Lahore Lions, right, come in. And this was post-
Oh, no. I know it's happened before. Yeah. But that was, you and I both know, that was a slightly different era of India-Pakistan relations. So, and all, you know, so I do think things are going to be very, very different from that point of view. My issue is how they make money out of it. The way I think they can do this, if they really want to do it, is this is what you sell to Saudis, which is not a good thing for cricket. But the Saudis are going to get into cricket one way or another, yeah. Right? If that you say to them, because they, it doesn't matter to them if no one watches the. I said Pal Royals. Is it Pal Royals?
I think it is Pal Royals. Yes, you're right.
Pal Rocks? Who's Rocks? Is there a Rocks
thing? There's no Rocks.
Anyway, no, I feel like there's a Rocks. But, you know, if the Seattle Orcas are playing the Melbourne Renegades, you know, in a Champions League, it needs to kind of be somewhere where that is, where that doesn't really matter. But you're not going to get masses of views on those games. And you know, so it, the whole thing's weird. You almost have to have an international player draft, I think. I was thinking about this the other day. The best way of doing it is to say you can have all of your local players, but the international players all go back into a draft, and then you have to pick them for the Champions League, which is horrendous, but might be the only way it works.
Yeah, I know. I take that. And also, if Saudi money does come into this, maybe their projections with Pakistan teams in it is higher, or those projections are higher.
We did talk about that before. Do you remember the Champions League? I reckon it was Mumbai, but I don't want to diss Mumbai in case I'm wrong. But there was an IPL team who had 5 overseas players in the Champions League 1 year rather than 4. And I can't, it was something to do with like someone had to pull out at last minute because they were injured, but then that guy went off and played a domestic game. It was so poorly like put together, that whole league. It really was. You know, and Nick Cummins is right. It was way ahead of its time. I loved it. I covered it more than I covered the IPL. I was absolutely, you know, all in with it. And I was covering the IPL pretty seriously in those days as well. But I absolutely loved it. But when it came down to it, it didn't make money. And I don't see now how it's going to make money this time, unless you end up with 3 Mumbai teams in. And if you end up with 3 Mumbai teams in, what are we doing here? Yeah. Like, is that what it should be? I don't even understand. And as the IPL owners buy more teams, doesn't it get even more ridiculous at that point?
I mean, they might as well invest in England at this point, right? We are hearing rumors that Indian
investors... Well, they've been trying to do that for ages.
So if that happens, then they basically own all the teams apart from the PSL teams, which might not even be a part of the competition. But hey, MBS, if you're listening to this, just make it happen for us. We'll enjoy it, you know? I did agree with Nick Cummins.
Do one good thing.
Yeah. Nick Cummins was like, it would be great to watch the Mumbai Indians play the Karachi Kings. And I was like, the Karachi Kings are not making it to the CL T20, even if it happens. But anyway, it's an interesting predicament. And I, as a fan of the sport, would love to see it materialize, because if the future is franchise T20s, then the Champions League is a football model that really works, and maybe you could, you know, make it work.
Oh, if we got it to work, it would be incredible. But it isn't football, and it doesn't work the same way. And the seasons don't work. The overseas players don't work. There's so many issues with this at the moment. And, you know, if this is going to make money from India, how many IPL teams do you need to have in it?
And then if you have
all those sort of
4
things.
IPL teams plus the winners of every other league, then how is that even fair, right?
And I'll tell you what, I remember last time that they bent over backwards to help the IPL teams over and over again, to the point at which it was silly. The league was a little bit silly at times. And if that's what it's going to be, then we might as well just have a second IPL, right? And we don't want that. I'd rather just have one long IPL and a Champions League would be ideal. But I think there's so many challenges here. I'd be shocked, if we're being really honest, mate, if this happens. But I'd be more shocked if it happens smoothly, just because I think there's way too many things to overcome.
It'll be a bilaterally organized thing if it happens. I've seen tweets in which people are saying, oh, the ICC needs to do this. Do you follow cricket?
They won't allow the ICC to do it. So, I mean, the ICC should do it. It would be a better idea if that was the case. That is not.
We don't live in an ideal world, right? Anyway, on that, and I think that point that you made about the staff is even more, important than the players itself, because, you know, the same guys are coaching all these multiple teams on many occasions. So I think that is, doesn't make this sound very feasible. Anyway, on that agonizing note, guys, we shall take a break. You're watching Uncovered with Jared and Behram. Stay with us. We'll be back after this ad.
This is brought to you by Cricket 8. They are a new player in the game trying to educate fans on what is really happening in cricket. We have a partnership with them where we host live watch-alongs, do podcasts and write articles. If you want to know what is really happening with our game, visit cricket8.com.
Welcome back to Uncovered, everybody. You with Behram and Jared. And the next thing on our itinerary is that Jared, Kagiso Rabada has spoken up about the New Zealand Test Tour and how the tour clashed with the SA20. He called it a scheduling disaster, which was unacceptable, and also went on to term it as a double book, which, to be fair, is the truth. He wasn't happy with it, not one bit. And, you know, clearly this is an entire, major sort of screw up by the CSA. But I was wondering if it's left players disgruntled, and Rabada is proof that it has.
Yeah, I think we heard something rumblings before from some players, hadn't we? And so we knew that it wasn't particularly, going well over there. But to have your main star come out and call out your organization tells you kind of where South African cricket is at the moment. It's great from him. I love that he came out and said it. And, you know, he's a guy who's making a lot of money from T20 cricket at the moment. And he's like, no, I'm a test guy. I would love to play test. And they clearly did make a mistake. And it's a really poorly run cricket organization, if we're being honest. And, it's not helped by the fact they seem to have a new board all the time. And, a rotating cast of Muppets coming through at different stages. And when we see something like this, and it's great that the players call them out, this is what the players should do. I always hate when, Ben Stokes is one of those players who always goes, someone needs to do something. Who's the someone, Ben? is it possible that it's someone at the ECB? Because who are you calling out, Arthur? Are you waiting for the hand of God to come down and change things? Rabada spoken, said the quiet bit out loud, and good on him for saying it. And we all knew it was stupid, and it's nice that that their main star has called them out, and it might open up for some other players to say some similar things as well, of just like, what are we doing here? Like, what is the future? Right, are we going to give up our summer every time? That means we can't play any major international cricket, so why are we playing international cricket anymore? Shouldn't we just go to limited overs World Cups and quit test cricket?
They're all valid questions to ask. And I mean, KG Rabada has always been outspoken. I mean, if you've got his strike rate in test cricket, why wouldn't you want to play more, right?
Got a great strike rate off the field.
Yeah. and he's copped a few demerit points that he could probably take to court at this point based on what we've seen after all of that stuff. But anyway, speaking of, really shitty cricket boards, let's talk about the PCB a bit. Now, this is not in the list of talking points. This is just stuff.
I was going to say, I don't know what this is.
This is just stuff that has happened in between the time where I gave the talking points to Shubo and this show. There was an army camp, as you all know, which is now complete. Yay! Army camp's done. Some really funny video content came out of it as well. There was one in which Azam climbed a mountain after everyone else, and people were like, Azam! Azam! Really funny stuff. You guys should go check that out. But also, they've announced a coaching team. So clearly, this is a coaching team announced in haste, because it seems like a stopgap solution. None of those, assignments or whatever, they don't sound like they're long-term, because Azhar Mahmood, former bowling coach, is now the head coach, right? And we also know that Shaheen Shafridi is still pissed, by the way, in all of this. And as you would imagine, he would be. They literally didn't tell him, they'd remove him and removed him. But apart from Azhar, who I don't have a problem with, in fact, I feel like he should just come in as bowling coach once you have a regular coaching setup. Mohammad Yusuf, who was on the selection panel, is the batting coach. Syed Ajmal is the bowling coach, and Wahab Riaz, who was also a selector and chief selector till not long ago, is a senior team manager. What does that even mean?
Wow. Is it possible? Is he still on the selection committee?
I think so. And I don't know how many hats he wants to wear ever since he's retired. Like, he's been everything. He's in a competition with the chairman of how many hats they want to wear. Yeah, I mean,
well, he could be the analyst if he's friendly to the chairman on Twitter.
He could probably be a better analyst than whatever forestry and fisheries guys they've hired. But yeah,
wasn't there some rumored international coaches as well?
Yeah, so the rumors, which are quite strong actually, are that Gary Kirsten has been roped in. And I mean, even though he's got an IPL gig, $2 million USD a year is still money that would make anyone think. I would take
if
that.
You get it.
I would take Gary Kirsten. And
if you get it,
yeah. If you get it is also important because payments is always an issue. Jason?
Well, not just payments, but I mean, like $2 million a year means you need to be Pakistani coach for a year. Mm. That seems like a long time to me.
A series at best, right? Based on what we've seen in the last year. But anyway, the other big one is Jason Gillespie. And he actually resigned from his role as head coach at South Australia and also the Adelaide Strikers. So that one might actually materialize. And Dizzy is someone who I really respect. I think he's a fantastic coach. I also respect coaches who have worked their way up the ladder. So if you're dropping that money on Kirsten and Dizzy, that's far better than dropping that money on Watto, who is new, as much as I love Watto. So let's see if this even happens.
But what would you be doing with that? You know, why do you need Gillespie and Kirsten? Or is it just they've both been offered it?
I think they've both been offered the roles of head coach for Kirsten and bowling coach for Gillespie. I think that's the, or whatever the rumors have told me thus far, that's where we're at. But right now, they clearly couldn't lock them, you know, instantly, because now they've got this stopgap solution. And, you know, this close to a World Cup, you'd want the coaching staff and the players to kind of be in sync, as opposed to, hey, the World Cup's starting tomorrow, here's your new coaching team. That just doesn't sound ideal to me, not at all.
No, what you should do is get other people with other jobs who aren't actually coaches to come in and do it as well.
Yeah. Or that, right? But yeah, I mean, it's been a fish market at the PCB, so I don't even know what to expect next. They had 1 week of W's and it's been L on L on L ever since. Have you heard about the Ehsanullah thing? Ever since Mayank Yadav came up to the scene, people were like, oh, where's Pakistan's 155 click pacer? Who was Ehsanullah in the previous PSL? Well, he hasn't played or bowled a delivery really since April 2023. He initially had an elbow problem and they misdiagnosed it or delayed the diagnosis as per the medical head, Sohail Saleem at PCB, who I don't understand how he has a job with all of these injuries. And then the extra workload screwed up his elbow. He got a fracture. He had to be treated for it. He got surgery. The surgery was unsuccessful. He hasn't bowled. And here's a guy who now, Ali Tareen, the Multan Sultan's owner, is now kind of facilitating his rehab and taking him to the UK. And after all of this, I believe the chairman came in and was like, we'll foot the bill. So I suppose, thank you. But you know, it's so sad that you'd barely ever get these 155 click bowling fast bowlers. You had one, could have been a middle overs enforcer, and you've wrecked him, as you have wrecked so many other guys. Like Naseem Shah not too long ago, when he was complaining about his back and shoulder, you burnt him out and injured him. Shaheen, you know, you never diagnosed the knee injury during fielding, and then he was out for like almost a year. So it's just so, so soul-sapping when you look at this medical panel and what the PCB is up to and how, you know, India are going to give Mayank Yadav the best physios and doctors and coaches and all of that stuff. Whereas if he was Pakistani, he was screwed. Absolutely screwed.
Yeah, it comes back to what I was saying before about Ben Stokes, which is the ECB has come to the idea now that you need to keep your best players on the field for as long as possible in any way, shape or form. And Pakistan still just, oh, we'll find another 90-mile-an-hour bowler. Yeah. It's like, well, not if you injure the first seven you find and you don't get them recovering, right? You know, it's an idiotic way of doing it. It's the way that cricket was always done. Right. You know, Dennis Lilly remade himself as a bowler on his own. He didn't do it with Cricket Australia. Right. Yeah. He did it in spite of Cricket Australia. And now the next Dennis Lilly in Australia wouldn't have to do that. Pat Cummins just sat on the bench. Even Spencer Johnson was around for ages. Right. You know, Bert Cockley, who never ended up making it and ended up playing in Major League Cricket in America, well, minor league cricket. Don't know if he played the majors, but, you know, players like him, he was still in the system for ages. That's what you should be doing. But I'm sure they'll find another tape ball wizkid and it'll be all
fine. Yeah, and then when they'll find a proper pace bowling trio, they'll play them all versus Nepal. And then one of them is going to get injured. I'm actually legitimately afraid that they will injure someone in the build-up to this T20 World Cup because it's just been that farcical. Speaking of farcical, I don't know how much you followed Usman Khan's career, but this is a guy who was Pakistani. A bit of a cult hero in the PSL now, scores hundreds for fun, has really cemented his spot at Multan Sultans. He recently reconsidered his career because he had moved to the UAE and he was going to play for the UAE and was also getting gigs in UAE franchise tournaments. You've got the Abu Dhabi T10, you've got the ILT 20. Mm. He was somehow convinced by someone to, you know, put all of his eggs in the PCB basket. So he came back to Pakistan. Now he's copped a ban of 5 years by the Emirates Cricket Board. And up until 2029, forget about the international team. More importantly, I feel what's going to hit him financially is that he won't be able to participate in the Abu Dhabi T10 and the ILT 20. And knowing Pakistan, they're going to do him dirty. 100% they are, right? So I'm actually really afraid for this guy now, but I hope that this is, you know, a good move, because what do we know? Maybe he wins them the World Cup in true Pakistan fashion.
Explain to me why he was banned for 5 years. I don't really get the ban.
There was apparently a breach in his contract that was made with the UAE, and he was under the impression that there was a 30-day breathing period. So he thought he didn't do anything wrong. But then they investigated the contract and then said there has been a breach and there is a 5-year ban. And I mean,
I get that. I get that. I don't get the 5-year ban. Hmm. 5 years, what, like, so let's say he goes to Pakistan and it doesn't work. They've now lost out on a talent domestically as well. And to make their league better, like, it just feels like another stupid cricket board overreacting for no real reason. And I don't get it. I don't really understand why it's happened and what it means. Like, It's like Dick Weller being banned for life and 5 minutes later playing a game, right? It just feels like one of them. And cricket boards just keep doing stupid fucking things. So you don't have kids. When you have kids, one of the things you have to really not do is do the old thing of like, if you don't do that, you'll go to bed without your dinner. And it's like, you probably, if you're not going to follow through with it, don't say it.
Yeah.
Right. And cricket boards do this all the time. And in this sort of situation, he might lose out from this. You're right. Chances are, though, the people who are going to miss out the most is going to be strengthening the Emirates cricket, which he probably was allowed for. And he might have come back, and now he probably won't come back. And so,
I mean, I'm sure that the Multan Sultan's people have promised him like a diamond or a good contract, at least, you know, because they would have want, or anyone who is a PSL team would want that sort of player to not play as an international player. They don't want that player to fill out the foreign quota. They want him to play as a Pakistani.
Yeah. And look, he might make more money from this, but let's say he goes back to Multan Sultans and he plays for a year and a half. Sorry, two seasons, and then he's no good anymore. Multan Sultans don't want him anymore, right? These things happen all the time. He would have been able to go back to the UAE and play for an associate team. Is he likely to go back to the UAE now, is my question.
Maybe he can go to Hong Kong. I mean, there are other associate nations he can go apply his trade, and he will earn some bank from playing the PSL. Mm. I mean, I would love to see Pakistan select him. I mean, I know that when the audio podcast will be out, we'll know if he has been selected or not. But as we are recording this, we don't know that yet. And this is the series to give him. Like, it's New Zealand's D team. Give him a goddamn series. Rest Rizwan. You know what Rizwan can do. Don't play him in this one. Play Usman. Give him that, you know, pleasure that, you know, oh, I made the right move. I'm going to get a cap for Pakistan. Yeah. But knowing them, they're not going to select him. That would be very on brand with the PCB. Anyway, that's it for our topics for the day. Let's get some super chats that have come in this time whilst we've been recording Uncovered. So first up is Anish. He says, where are you seeing the IPL in the next 25 years? Bigger, grander, more money, more games of the year. In a nutshell,
in 25 years, if it's not a 6-month tournament, then something has gone horrendously wrong with the BCCI. It needs to be a proper league. Mm. It can't just keep being a 2-month pop-up. Like, these teams are too big. And that's what it will have to be. It will ravage international cricket. I mean, it already has in ways, but that's what it has to be. It's the most profitable form of cricket at the moment. And it should be run like a league, and we're still running it like it's a one-off pop-up World Cup type event, and it's not. And so I would assume that's what the future of the IPL is, but I couldn't tell you what's going to happen, because I would have thought by now we would have had 12 or 14 teams, and we would be at 3 months already, and we're not. So, you know, since Lalit Modi has left, there is no doubt that there has been a lack of imagination and maybe a lack of, you know, for all of his faults, his many, many, many faults, trying to bite off more than he could chew wasn't one of them. And at the moment, it does move a lot slower than it used to.
Remember that cricket is a funny game. 100 years before we protected our head, players looked after their groins. So don't be as stupid as old cricketers. Protect your computer now. NordVPN is the protection I use when facing cyber shortballs or when rights issues try to dismiss me. Geo-block so you can watch all the cricket you want. Grab your NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/Kimber.
Yeah, I mean, I expect the IPL to kill international cricket at some point. But, you know, I don't want it to because I love international cricket. But we don't get what we want in this world. We just get capitalism. And that is literally what the IPL is. Anyway, Keshav Huria. You went to Akshu Dhawala first. All right. Akshu says, Mumbai was indeed the team that played with 5 overseas players in 2011 and won that year too. Nice. So just to get his point across, he gave us $5. I love you, Akshu. You should come to every Uncovered.
What an absolute legend Akshu is. But I remember I wrote an article. I was still on Cricket with Balls back in those days. And I wrote an article where I said that in future, all IPL teams will automatically qualify for the semifinals of the Champions League. Which is obviously a parody because there were 4 teams, I think, in it at the time. So it didn't make any sense. And I won't say who, but a major cricket person retweeted it in the early days of Twitter and then got very, very angry when he found out it was a parody. But it shows you what people were thinking because of moments like this and everything else. And it was one of the things that stopped the Champions League being taken seriously this was later on in the Champions League, but it was all the little things on the way up to this that kind of caused all the issues of, well, you know, it's not Nottingham Forest, right? It's Nottingham Forest, but they can't use their coach because their manager is off with someone else, right? Like it's that sort of stuff that kept happening that it's like, well, how do we take this kind of thing all that seriously? And, you know, we've seen, you know, I think they used to have one in the NBA, or not in the NBA, but in basketball, which was called the McDonald's Trophy, I think, at one stage. And again, it didn't work because the NBA was too strong and the European teams were too spread out and everything else. And it's a brilliant idea, but, I find it hard to think it's about to happen.
Yeah, but I can assure you, Akshu, that if it does happen again, maybe they won't have that sort of blunder because cricket has gotten more serious, or at least T20 cricket has. Keshav Huria has a super chat question. He says, why do IPL teams continue to pick Kane Williamson and not Joe Root or Steve Smith when the other two are clearly better batters in T20? If at all you got to pick one of those, is it about the perception? It's weird. I think Root is a better T20 bat than both of those guys, Kane and Smith. And Root did get an IPL deal last year, but he rode the bench for the most of it. And it wasn't even an ideal team. Like, where would he play over there? So, I mean, I wouldn't pick any of those three in an ideal world, I suppose. But Joe Root is definitely, at least in my eyes, he's better than the other two.
He can bowl.
That. He can reverse
I
rap.
Think Joe Root... I think outside of early Steve Smith, who I do think was a good T20 player when he was younger, Joe Root's by far and away looked like the best of those guys. And I'm with you. I've never quite understood. Kane Williamson. So Rob Barron was telling me the other day that Kane Williamson, I think this is right, has something like, it's a ridiculous amount of runs in the power play in T20 cricket at a strike rate that is, I'm going to have to look this up because it's such a stupid number that when he said it out loud, I was like, that cannot be true. But teams keep trying. And I don't mind him as a bench player, but not if as you just said, it makes more sense to have someone like Joe Root in that position anyway than it does to have have Williamson. So I don't really understand why we're in a situation where this keeps happening. But let's see if I can find his power play record here. So he's played mostly in the IPL and domestically. So he averages 42 in the power play, right? That's good. He's made 1,600 runs, right? That's a lot of runs. I want you to guess what you think his strike rate is in the power play.
102.
You actually... When I thought it was 115, you are closer than I was. It's 105.
Ooh, I was really close.
What are we doing here? what are we doing that he's still, you know, I just don't. He's a fantastic cricketer and we all love him. But I don't understand the idea of it unless you want a coach. I don't know. It's just.
Simon Dude would cry you a river on this, right?
It's. I just think. I think it just shows. You just said that we're a lot more mature now than we used to be in T20 cricket, and then you see something like that, and you just like, it's just because we like Kane Williamson. Like, there isn't another reason that this could happen. So Kane Williamson in 2015 scored 109 runs in the power play at a strike rate of 181. His second highest strike rate in any year is 118.
Well,
that was 2014, right?
That tells you the story. I mean, think about it. In this current scenario with Gujarat, when Miller is out injured and they've replaced him with Kane, imagine Root replacing Miller. It's not a like for like, but it's better than replacing him with Kane.
Yeah. I also, this is just a random point, but teams who, squads in franchise cricket who do have backup players, you want to have a backup player who can bat any position from 1 to 6. And too often they don't. They have a backup player who can do one role. And so if he's replacing Miller, well, how do you replace Miller with Williamson? You know, you're going to have to switch your whole team around. Yeah. It's not very clever.
Yeah. And sometimes they spend 24 crores on Mitchell Starc, which will probably buy them 24 crore tiers at some point in this IPL. Anyway, final super chat of the day, Anish once again says, do you think cricket boards underpay their players? Some of them, yes. They grossly underpay their players. I know in Pakistan they do. I'm pretty sure South Africa is similar. India takes care of their players, but India also makes a lot of money. So remember that. I'm not sure how much of the lion's share goes to actual players, right?
India massively underpay their players. It's not even close. In fact, you could make an argument that India might underpay the most compared to anyone else, especially when you factor in how much money they make. And that's the most important thing. Cricket Australia have a deal with the Australian players where they make about 50% of the revenue. I think it's revenue, which is a very similar split to what the NBA players have with theirs. That's what it should be. These are the people putting their bodies on the line, their futures on the line. They're the people who get abused when something goes wrong. No one can remember the second assistant general manager of the team, right? We remember the players, and they're the ones that get slagged off. They're the ones whose family get abused at games, and all these sorts of things happen to them. They're the ones who could get killed by a cricket ball. They're the ones who could twist their ankle tomorrow and have to completely change their life. And quite often these days, don't get education. They don't have a backup, right? All those sorts of things, they should be paid way more money than they are. And, you know, sadly, cricket is run horrendously. And as far as I'm aware, Australia is the only one that has a high revenue split like that. That's what it should be. If you want to say it's 30%, I'm more than happy with 30% across the board. Too many cricket boards don't do that. And there are too many situations where the players are just not looked after. And it's not the top international players that are the issue here.
Yeah.
Top Indian international players, I still would argue they're underpaid, but they're not underpaid. They're not struggling financially. It's the entire system of your professional cricket where everyone is underpaid outside of about 6 to 8 players. And it causes masses of issues. I think it breeds corruption and fixing. It means that things like Colpack are more likely to happen and people are more likely to retire from their international teams early and all these sorts of things. Because quite simply, cricket boards have never, never paid the players what they deserve to be paid.
And then they strong arm those players despite not paying them enough, which is ridiculous. I mean, I remember there was one uncovered in which we were talking about how stadiums in India, they are named after administrators and not cricketers. So that goes on to show you the culture a bit, right? Arco in the comments is saying that Bangladesh is also massively underpaid. So that's just sad.
Yeah. As I said, outside of Australia, I would say that's the only one that I'm aware of. I might be missing one. I'm not sure about New Zealand.
I think they have a good structure in New Zealand.
I don't think it's 50%, though. I don't think it's half of what... Well, the only reason any cricket board has money is because the teams go out on the field and people put their body and their physicality on the line. Yeah. There is no cricket board in the world that has made money without cricketers making the money for them.
That's true.
Right? But there's that great question that Usman Samiuddin asked at the... at the Big Three takeover. There's about 5 of us in Dubai asking questions. And Usman Samiuddin says to the then leader of the ICC, the New Zealander, I've forgotten his name. He says, outside of being in the biggest TV markets, what makes ECB, Cricket Australia and BCCI the best cricket boards? And you just suddenly saw that blood go out of this guy's face, because no one thinks they're the best cricket boards altogether. It's just that they have managed to get more money because of the TV markets or the ticket markets in, you know, especially in Australia and England, you know, and that sponsorship markets that all three of those have available to them, right? No one thinks that they're great cricket boards. The ECB have screwed up the game massively for decades in this country, right? Cricket Australia allow, before the Big Bash, let things absolutely go apart. And, you know, BCCI were paying for decades to put cricket on TV, right? Like, we know that these are not brilliantly run cricket boards, especially historically, and I would argue even till now, right? It's just that some of them are in really good markets, and so they find a way to make money. But the BCCI are not rich, right, because of anything other than the fact that those cricketers have gone out in the field and made them rich. Cricket Australia has a healthy influx of money for the same reason, and English cricket exactly the same, right? That is what it comes down to, and I don't think cricketers are looked after enough financially.
Yeah, I concur, and I suppose that answers your question, Anish. And on that grim note, we will call off this episode of Uncovered. Thank you so much to everyone who came in the comments and interacted with us. If you like this video, share it with your friends. Give us a like on YouTube and subscribe to both this YouTube channel and Jared's other channel on YouTube. And just a reminder to everybody that we do have a website up now, goodareas.co, on which you can find all of the written pieces, all of the videos, all of the podcasts. So go and bookmark that website. And yeah, we'll be back with another episode of Uncovered next week. That is all for now. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recording. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.